And good morning. Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Nadia Shamsuddin, and today I have a special guest, Cecil Bothwell, an investigative reporter based in Asheville, North Carolina. Cecil's latest book is The Prince of War, Billy Graham's Crusade for a Holy Christian Empire. Cecil has received national awards from the Association of Alternative News Weeklies and the Society of Professional Journalists for Investigative Reporting. Cecil currently hosts a weekly music and opinion program on 103.5 FM in Asheville, North Carolina, and he is an ordained minister and participates in a local jail ministry. Welcome to the program this morning, Cecil.
Good morning, Nadia. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you for joining us. First of all, I wanted to ask you how you became interested in writing about Billy Graham.
That came about due to a news story that was published by the Associated Press and distributed in March of 2002. Up until that time, I had been aware of Graham for his crusades and his presidential prayer breakfasts and so forth, but I hadn't paid much close attention. And the story that came out in March of that year detailed the tape transcript of a tape from the Nixon White House in which Richard Nixon and Billy Graham were discussing the problem of the Jews in America and were running down the Jews in all sorts of ways, blaming them for doing in the country, for producing pornography, for all sorts of things. And that really surprised me, and it surprised many people in the country. And Billy Graham's PR company issued an apology, and he made up with the National Association of Rabbis, and it kind of went on by. But I'd been
Yeah, it's interesting that you say in the book that there a lot of people thought that that was a brief conversation, but actually it was within the context of a tape that was about an hour and a half long.
That's what surprised me. I thought, okay, an Associated Press story is a couple paragraphs. I knew as an investigative reporter there's always more than gets reported. So I pulled up the original transcript, and it was an hour and a half, and it didn't stray from the topic. And Graham led the conversation as much as Nixon did and really ran down the Jewish influence in America and said that they think I'm their friend, but I can't tell them the truth and so forth. I thought, well, wow, what else don't we know about Billy Graham? And so I went back and started looking. I found that Bob Haldeman, who'd been Nixon's chief of staff, went into office deciding to make the Nixon White House the most fully documented White House in the history of America.
Interesting.
Yeah, and so he kept the Daily Diary, which was published after he died in 1994, and he mentioned the Jew conversation. And when that came out, Life magazine interviewed Billy Graham, and Billy Graham flatly denied that it ever occurred. He insinuated that Haldeman must have made it up. And, of course, that was 94. 8 years later, the tape comes out, and who was right? Bob Haldeman was right.
This is all very interesting, and it's you paint a clear picture of a man full of contradictions. We're going to take our first break, and we'll be right back on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay with us. We'll be back shortly.
Are you concerned about cholesterol, blood pressure? Are you experiencing chest pain? Are you looking for a more natural method to help improve your health issues?
I had two mild heart attacks, and I had an 80 to 90% blockage in my artery. Don recommended I take this Cardivite. I haven't had any chest pain since I've been on it. It's brought my cholesterol down. My blood sugar was really fluctuating from 10 to 14 when I went on the Cardivite. You know, it really leveled it out. I'm really pleased, and I feel so good about it. I'll tell you, it's great for your circulation, because I've noticed that I've had problems with my feet because of the diabetes, and they're getting better. They don't hurt as much. It's really great. I recommend this to anybody.
To learn more, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our website at heartdrop.com. That's heartdrop.com. Call 1-877-928-8822.
It's not a matter of if, but when. If it happens, you want to be ready to give your loved ones a fighting chance. Do not rely on someone else to come through for you at a time when it could be about life and death. Your best chance is Safe Castle Royal, the premier crisis preparedness buyers club out there. Members get everything at rock-bottom pricing with at least 20% off everything in our store all the time and free shipping to the lower 48. Emergency storage food, prefab shelters and safe rooms, and hundreds of other essential products will get you through the toughest of times. Right now you can join the club for only $10, a one-time lifetime fee that gets you some of the best prices anywhere on preparedness products. Please use the coupon code Club Radio when joining to receive your special membership price. Do it now. Go to SafeCastleRoyal.com. That's SafeCastleRoyal.com. Sign up and use the Club Radio coupon code or call 1-877-673-2394 and be on your way to peace of mind that comes with being prepared.
Gasoline prices are out of control. Are you tired of giving your hard-earned dollars to the major oil companies? Did you know that the oil companies have developed special products to increase mileage in their own vehicles? Very few customers even know such products exist. SFR has obtained this technology that is backed by testing the oil companies have run, yet they don't want you to know about them. This product is made right here in the United States and is not a typical gas treatment found at your local store. SFR lasts up to 6 months. SFR works so well that it even improves mileage on new cars. SFR recently ran this ad, and the response from all over the U.S. was so incredibly strong that we're allowing listeners to receive a free bottle when one is purchased at our regular price of $9.99. If you're not completely delighted with the savings, we'll refund the purchase price and shipping. Share the oil company's secret and get SFR now. Call 888-USE-SFR-1. That's 888-873-7371 today.
And welcome back to the program. Our guest, Cecil Bothwell, speaking about his latest book, The Prince of War. And Cecil, just before our break, we were talking about some of the inconsistencies of the things that Graham said compared with the historical record. And since today is Martin Luther King's birthday, I wanted to get into that subject about their relationship and what King said and what Graham said and how they characterized it.
Well, what I did when I got into the project was I read everything I could find, everything published about Graham, and then the peripheral people involved, and then began to go further and further into the background records. And the King information was one of the most surprising pieces of the puzzle. Since Martin Luther King died, in the aftermath, Billy Graham has claimed to have been very close to King. He claims that King approved of his ministry, that he said, you need to do what you do in order for me to do what I do, and that sort of thing. But when I went back and looked at the historical record, that was far, far, far from the case. Most notably, King's letter from Birmingham Jail was written, if not explicitly to Graham, it certainly included Graham in the group of ministers that he was directing it to, worrying about the white ministers who were wanting the integration to go slow. Graham always supported the government. He always believed that you had to obey all the laws, and so he was directly opposed to civil disobedience as a tactic. And, of course, that's what King used to great success in Memphis and elsewhere. When maybe most famously, Martin Luther King's speech, the I Have a Dream speech, is probably his most famous single speech in 1963. The morning after that speech, Billy Graham called a press conference and told the news people that only when Jesus comes again will the little black children and little white children of Alabama walk hand in hand. The morning after King made his famous anti-war speech in New York City, over the years, King began to realize that he was looking at a class problem as well as a race problem, and noted that black, especially black poor soldiers, were disproportionately dying in Vietnam, and that fed his opposition to the Vietnamese War. And when he made his anti-war speech, Graham called a news conference the next day and said that Dr. Martin Luther King was an embarrassment to the Negro soldiers serving in Vietnam.
Oh, goodness.
Mm. And also noteworthy, I found, was that for claiming to have been a very close friend of King's, he missed the funeral. Now, there were 200 and some thousand people in Atlanta for Martin Luther King's funeral, well represented by clergy, all the important clergy across the country, sports heroes, politicians, I mean, from across the board, white and black. I think they canceled the Academy Awards that year. They delayed the start of the baseball season. I mean, it was a major event in America. Billy Graham missed the funeral.
Do you think that he was pressured because he was so ingratiated with Hoover and some of the other officials in the government that he was pressured into not going?
It could have been. I found through my research, as you've read, that he was quite close to J. Edgar Hoover. Hoover fed him information about King. And, of course, we learned in the aftermath that Hoover had wiretapped King for years and was the chief source of stories about King's affairs and so forth. And there could have been pressure. There could well have been pressure from that direction.
Well, and, you know, you say his success was due largely to his early grasp of the power of mass media. It's interesting that you write about Hearst, William Randolph Hearst, as he told all of his newspapers to, quote, puff Graham. Why do you think Graham allowed himself to be used by Hearst?
Well, I think it was a two-way street. According to early reports, Graham was having mixed success touring the country doing his crusades. His Los Angeles crusade in 1949 was in a large arena, but they weren't filling the seats by any means. And he managed to get an interview with Hearst. It's kind of lost whether he sought the interview with Hearst or whether Hearst sought the interview with him. But it was during that Los Angeles crusade that the Soviets exploded their first atomic bomb. And Graham immediately picked up on that and started preaching about the threat that the communists posed to Christianity. And Hearst was rabidly anti-communist, and he very much liked that message. So he had an interview and issued his famous dictum to Puff Graham, and immediately they started filling all the seats in Los Angeles. So it was a clear indication to Graham that worked. Also interesting to me in all of my research was that I tended to think, anyway, of the ministers who go around doing evangelistic work as drawing crowds by dint of their message. But in Los Angeles, 1949, Graham's advertising budget for his crusade was $25,000. That was an enormous chunk of change in 1949.
What is that in today's figures?
Oh, boy. That I don't remember right now, but let's see. I'd have to flip through my book to remember it.
Quarter of a million, I would guess.
Easily, yeah. It would easily be in that range. It was a big, big advertising budget. And he was heavily using radio and print media at that time. And very soon, during that time, some movie companies tried to recruit him because he was a very handsome, dynamic character. And he turned down the offers but started his own movie company at the time, and soon he was on TV. So he's made good use of the media continuously through his career. And then Hearst, who was a friend of Luce, who owned Time Life, who was also a rabid anti-communist, Hearst got him in touch with Luce, and Luce then added Time and Life to Puffing Graham. And Graham has had, there have been more stories about Billy Graham in Time magazine than anyone else since those days. Mm-hmm. And he's been on the cover a handful of times anyway.
Yeah, you said, you mentioned that he was a Fuller Brush salesman for a while.
Yeah, before he turned to his ministry, he was a Fuller Brush salesman, and he was the best Fuller Brush salesman in North and South Carolina at the time. I guess there's always a contest between salespeople and businesses.
Yeah, and what was interesting is you said that when he was speaking about the gospel that, well, we should advertise it like we advertise everything else.
Yeah, he said we advertise soap. Why shouldn't we advertise the gospel? And oddly, I mean, one of the many times that I found discrepancies in his ethical record was about his Fuller Brush. In his own autobiography, Just As I Am, he brags that he used to lie to housewives. He would go to the door. That was his technique. He would knock on the door and say, "I'm not here to sell you anything." That was the first word out of it, the words out of his mouth. Well, he was a salesman. I mean,
well, a lot of inconsistencies in his character. Yeah.
During those days, he was rabidly anti-communist and anti-socialist. He preached a very strong anti-socialist line here in the United States. But when he went to England the first time, his literature had arrived ahead of him. It had been shipped ahead, and it was about. It talked about. It said what Hitler's bombs couldn't do to England, socialism soon did. Well, at the time, the Labour Party was in power, and that was explicitly a socialist party in England, and there was a huge uproar. Why was Billy Graham talking about socialism? I mean, that was they'd embraced it in England.
Mm-hmm.
And when he got there, he said, oh, that somebody in my office changed that. It was supposed to say secularism. Well, I mean, his message had been socialism. Yeah, he can correct
that's quite a faux pas.
Yeah.
And, you know, you write about some interesting aspects of his having grown up in the South during the 1920s and 30s. And you paint a picture of relationships in his life and how much racial bias entered into his thinking. Could you expound on that a little bit more?
Sure. I would say that, like I suppose many people growing up in the Old South, there was racial bias present. In fact, in one of the books about him, I think Marshall Frady's book, A Parable of American Righteousness, he quotes one of his boyhood friends saying, "Hey, I found this great barber shop. This black barber who cuts your hair really cheap, does a good job really cheap." And Billy Graham said, "I'll never go in a nigger barber shop as long as there's a white barber in the area." He had two of his grandfathers were Confederate soldiers, officers. One later joined the KKK. Ruth Bell Graham's, Ruth Bell was Billy's wife who died last June.
Yeah.
Her father was head of the John Birch Society in Asheville and was the chief opponent of integration of schools here in Asheville. So, and there's a lot of hard feeling in Asheville still today for Billy Graham holding segregated crusades here in the 50s.
Yeah, that's just so difficult to conceive with the image that many of us grew up with Billy Graham. I was born in the 60s, and I just, my image of him was just standing in the pulpit with those huge crowds. So a lot of these revelations have been quite startling, I think, for a lot of people in my generation.
Oh, I think so. I think probably the low point in all of it would have been during the Nixon years. Billy Graham sent Nixon what was called the Missionary's Secret Plan for winning the war, for ending the war in Vietnam. And it advocated bombing the dikes in North Vietnam. Bombing dikes in a water country like that, where the whole country exists, is on rice paddies that are everywhere, and there's series of dikes that hold back, you know, billions of gallons of water. It would have killed upward of 1 million people.
Wow.
And should we go back to that after the break?
Yeah, because I have a couple of comments about that. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Are you looking for a one-stop shop to find all your favorite books and videos? Look no further. Northern Voice Bookstore has everything you need. Hundreds of titles, from self-defense, survival, and financial freedom, to history, politics, conspiracy, and everything you need to know about the New World Order. You can order everything you need on the web 24 hours a day at northernvoicebookstore.com. Or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, Post Office Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. Northern Voice Bookstore offers a broad range of different perspectives and believes strongly that the American people need alternative sources of information in order to understand the society they live in today. You won't find a better selection of books or videos anywhere. So make Northern Voice Bookstore your bookstore. Visit us online at northernvoicebookstore.com or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, P.O. Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. And make sure to tell them you heard about us on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Attention, this is an RBN financial news bulletin. Have you ever wanted to get out of debt? Maybe even make some of your debts disappear completely? If so, and you're an RBN listener, there is a very real chance you will be able to do it. Here is why. A new manual has just been published that reveals how you can get out of debt in 90 minutes without any loans or bankruptcy whatsoever. The insider secrets revealed allow you to get out of debt so fast and so completely that it makes some people feel like they're stealing, but they're not stealing. The secrets taught in the manual are 100% legal and 100% ethical. It's just that bankers, debt collectors, and credit card companies don't want you to know about these loopholes. Don't be a prisoner of debt. Go to outin90.com. That's www.outin90.com or call 877-327-0365. RBN listeners receive a free DVD with purchase.
Listening to RBN has helped you to prepare for an emergency and invest in the gold and silver markets, but now you'd like help managing your other investments. Would you prefer personalized investment advice? Onesti Investment Advisors can help. Onesti Investment Advisors will customize a portfolio with no conflicts of interest. Onesti Investment Advisors is a fee-based firm. We do no underwriting and receive no commission, so we always look after your interest. The better you do, the better we do. Get diversification by investing in stocks, bonds, mutual funds, ETFs, and more. Onesti Investment Advisors can help fund education, plan for retirement, lower your taxes, increase retirement income, and protect against a falling dollar. You've worked hard for your assets. Former floor trader and certified financial planner certificate, John Onesti, has the experience to help grow your investments. If you're looking to improve your investment results, call or email for a free consultation. Onesti Investment Advisors, 505-296-2453. That's 505-296-2453. Click on our banner ad on RBN or visit our website at onestiadvisors.com. Onesti Investment Advisors, looking after your investments.
And welcome back. We're talking with Cecil Bothwell about his new book, The Prince of War. And Cecil, just before the break, you were talking about Graham advocating bombing the dikes in Vietnam. I want to ask you, who would have been feeding him ideas like this?
Well, there's an interesting circularity to it. He was an intimate of Henry Kissinger's. From Eisenhower forward, Kissinger had been in contact with Graham at different presidents' behest. Most of the contact occurred during the Johnson and Nixon administrations. And, of course, Kissinger was quite a hawk concerning Vietnam. That particular letter, Graham said, was fed to him by ministers in Vietnam. The ideas were the collection from some ministers in Vietnam. But also one has to look at the involvement of CIA with the ministers in Vietnam through the Summer School of Linguistics, Graham's organization. It was involved with the CIA, and the CIA was using the Summer School of Linguistics as translators in Vietnam, and their way into a country was to pose as ministers. That happened both in South America and in Vietnam. So there might have been kind of a circularity of information flowing from Kissinger and perhaps the CIA to the so-called ministers and back to Graham and then back to Nixon. it's hard.
Yeah, that happens so often with foreign missionaries that they get involved with the CIA and they get pulled into it, persuaded by some warped ideology sometimes. It's a shame.
Right.
Cecil, we have a call on the line. Mike from Kentucky. He has a question for you. Mike, are you with us?
Hello.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning to you. The issues you're bringing up, I don't think you're implying that they are involved, that they're in a vacuum. You know, the times, of course, have completely changed. I guess 100 years ago, women couldn't own property and you could marry them at 12. Have you studied the H.K. Egerton, the former head of the Asheville National Association of Colored Persons, and his I don't know what you would call it, his epiphany or whatever he had when he started, I guess his brother for years was trying to get him to look at things a little differently. And after he was, retired from the NAACP, he started studying some of the stuff around his ancestors' histories.
Mm-hmm. Well, Cecil, did you want to weigh in on that?
He marched across Dixie because he realized he was wrong about so much about how black people were treated in the South in a Confederate uniform from Asheville to Austin, Texas.
That's a great question, Mike. Go ahead, Cecil.
Well, locally, H.K. is almost as well-known as Billy Graham. He often stands on highway overpasses in his Confederate uniform holding a Stars and Bars flag. And his thinking has gone. I haven't particularly paid close attention, and it isn't in any direct way connected to Billy Graham's life.
Mike, did you have a specific question about Billy Graham for Cecil?
Well, you know, I've seen him for years being, talked about as being well connected to the elite, and you mentioned Henry Kissinger and such, and it does seem like he had a strategy to become well connected, and I guess some of this attitude was made him the darling. Some of the racial attitudes he had may have made him a darling of the elite, the presidents and such. Do you know if he held the same views about other races, like the racial conundrum that is the Jews? Things like that.
Well, we were talking about that earlier in the show, about the taped conversation between Graham and Nixon.
Yeah.
I would say that Graham's loyalty seems principally to be to power and money. As a result of my research, he's stayed very closely connected to, of course, the political elite here, but also to the corporate elite. Another fairly surprising thing that I ran into is that during the Clinton years, the U.S. was joining with other countries in trying to impose trade embargoes on countries that violated human rights or deemed to be in violation of human rights. And Exxon and other corporations formed an organization to fight that because they don't like trade sanctions. And Billy Graham sided with the corporations. He said that that we shouldn't interfere on human rights issues in other countries.
What do you think some of his earliest? Sorry, what do you think his mentors were? Some of the most important influential people that created his personality in a sense that gave him the inclination to be ingratiated with politics and the media.
Well, early on, he was very close to oil company executives in Texas and to arms manufacturers. Let me think if I can pull the names up in my thinking. I know that he was real close to McGuire. Russell McGuire, who was a machine gun manufacturer and who purchased the American Mercury magazine, which he made into an anti-Semitic publication.
Mm.
And he was very close to, Brown and Root, who became Halliburton.
Oh, boy. That's interesting. All right. We're going to take another break, and we'll be right back with our discussion with Cecil Bothwell and his book, The Prince of War.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Gasoline prices are out of control. Are you tired of giving your hard-earned dollars to the major oil companies? Did you know that the oil companies have developed special products to increase mileage in their own vehicles? Very few customers even know such products exist. SFR has obtained this technology that is backed by testing the oil companies have run, yet they don't want you to know about them. This product is made right here in the United States and is not a typical gas treatment found at your local store. SFR lasts up to 6 months. SFR works so well that it even improves mileage on new cars. SFR recently ran this ad, and the response from all over the U.S. was so incredibly strong that we're allowing listeners to receive a free bottle when one is purchased at our regular price of $9.99. If you're not completely delighted with the savings, we'll refund the purchase price and shipping. Share the oil company's secret and get SFR now. Call 888-USE-SFR-1. That's 888-873-7371 today.
Since 1988, Herbal Healer Academy has been the global supplier of the finest natural medicines. We specialize in keeping you alive and healthy. We provide outstanding products like ECX, colloidal silver, olive leaf extract, oregano oil, and hundreds of herbals, oils, books, and educational materials. We have homeopathic detox solutions for chemtrails, radiation, MSG, and aspartame poisoning. We also train naturopathic healers via correspondence education. Why wait any longer? Go ahead and do it today. Sign up on the web and receive our new 120-page catalog and a current Herbal Healer newsletter free. Simply log on to herbalhealer.com and check out the online member testimonials and our hundreds of exceptional products. That's herbalhealer.com, your website for safe, effective, natural alternatives and education. That's herbalhealer.com.
This is an urgent RBN financial bulletin. Have you ever thought about making a little extra money at home with your computer? If you have and you would like to make money by actually learning how to beat Bilderberger insiders at their own game, this will be the most interesting message you will ever hear. Here is why. We all know that knowledge is power, but what most people don't know about is how to gain the kind of knowledge that insiders would really rather that you didn't have. Once you get that knowledge, it then becomes a question of turning that information into financial gain. Well, there's now a very real chance you will actually be able to make money this way. Here's what it's all about. There's a new program available that teaches you how to scan the media for enormously profitable insider stories. Once you learn what's ahead for a given company, you'll have an enormous advantage over the rest of the market. Get the details at www.earlymorningadvantage.com. That's earlymorningadvantage.com or call 815-259-4552. Once again, the site is www.earlymorningadvantage.com.
And we're back. We're talking with Cecil Bothwell this morning about his new book, The Prince of War, Billy Graham's Crusade for a Holy Christian Empire. Before we continue, I wanted to bring you a brief message from one of our sponsors, Blacklisted Herb. 77 RBN listeners are needed immediately to test an amazing blacklisted herbal product considered to be the single most powerful traditional remedy on earth. In fact, medical studies in other countries have been conducted on the astonishing effects this rare mineral-like compound has had on arthritis, obesity, energy, memory, and even reproductive health. To claim your supply as an RBN listener, simply go to blacklistedherb.com. That's blacklistedherb.com. Shipments will be filled on a first-come, first-served basis, so it's important that you move quickly. Call 1-877-327-0365. That's 877-327-0365. And I also want to encourage you to visit our website, republicbroadcasting.org. A lot of new information being posted there daily, so I would encourage you to visit often. And Cecil, just wanted to get back with our conversation that we were in before the break. And you know, I had a question about the fact that you say that he sealed most of his personal papers until long after his death. And, you know, while a lot of public figures do that, in Graham's case, what do you think he is afraid of?
I'm not entirely clear what he's afraid of, but one of the another interesting sort of odd quirk of Graham's that I came on in the course of my research is that he is a very fearful person personally. His associates, as far back as the 50s, would even joke about him being afraid to go on airplanes, that if the airplane engines sound changed, he was worried that he would run off to the Mayo Clinic at the first hint of a cold. His son wrote in his autobiography that Billy always sleeps with a loaded gun beside the bed when he's home here in the mountains, which I find astonishing for two reasons. One is I lived in a very similar location just down the road, I mean about 15, 16 miles out of Asheville here, and for 25 years I never locked my door. I didn't even know where the key to the house was. I mean, I consider living up in the mountains to be highly secure, and he feels very insecure, and I would think to me, faith ought to give one some sense of security. If one believes in God's plan, why do you need a gun beside the bed?
Absolutely.
So there's a sense of personal fearfulness. Also, J. Edgar Hoover filled him up with fears about electronic eavesdropping and about people meaning him ill. And so maybe that's contributed to him sealing his records. I know they say that many famous people seal their records for the protection of others. And it's funny.
Go ahead.
When I've looked through some of the tape transcripts and all from the Nixon era, a lot of it's been redacted by the National Security Agency.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Seems strange.
Well, it would be reasonable to assume that if he had the ear of a number of presidents as well as officials in all these different administrations, that there would have been things that had been confided in him. It's just very interesting, though, that as more information emerges about him, it's a really sharp shift from the image that, as I mentioned earlier, that I grew up with, and the real Billy Graham, which is in a lot of ways quite shocking.
Yeah, I had thought of him as a fairly benign person before I started this research, and I had no intent to go in and savage him. I don't have any particular ill will toward the man, but I think that as an investigative reporter, my highest duty is to report what I find, and so my book is heavily footnoted. This is in his words. It's in the words of the people who were close to him. In the introduction, I make a couple of comments of what I've found, and in my conclusion, I voice an opinion. But the main content of the book is strictly a historical record, and I did find it quite surprising. Another one that will surprise a lot of people is that in the week before the first Gulf War, we were leading up to war there. We had the huge buildup supported by a large contingent of nations who were all going in with us to free Kuwait. Billy Graham phoned George Bush, President George H.W. Bush, and told him that Saddam was the Antichrist and that it was his historical mission to go get him. And this is according to George H.W. Bush's White House diary.
Yeah, I can't tell you how disturbing that is, because for anybody truly understanding and having a proper interpretation of Scripture of who the Antichrist is, that's really a gross misinterpretation to call someone that is blatantly evil the Antichrist. And the Antichrist, in my understanding, is someone who will appear on the surface is to be very benevolent. Is that not the case?
That's, to the extent that I understand the Scripture, that's the description. Billy Graham has always vilified the enemies of America in that sort of way. He referred to communism as being the Antichrist in the 50s, the whole of communism being the Antichrist. And he's tended to be bombastic in whatever he said. I would say scripturally that's kind of suspect. It's interesting, in recent years, he's pulled away from strict scriptural belief. He now says that he picks and chooses. like he doesn't believe the world was made in 7 days anymore, but he does believe that Jonah was swallowed by a whale.
Well, I guess he's fallen prey to believing his own propaganda, which is dangerous. That can affect someone's ego, especially with all the publicity he's had through the years. So, yeah, I wanted you to comment about his influence with the Gulf War and his connection with anything that's been going on recently with this Gulf War.
Well, although Franklin Graham is closer personally to George W. Bush than Billy Graham is. When George Bush decided to declare war in the National Cathedral after 9/11, he called in Billy Graham to give his blessing to the war. And Billy Graham, of course, endorsed our side, saying that God was on our side. But that's the major extent that I could find on the record. Of course, a more recent problem with this documentation is that Bush sealed all of his father's presidential material permanently and plans to seal all of his presidential material permanently. And I don't know what permanent means in the larger world, but he's basically issued an executive directive that says that presidents can withhold their information. So I don't know if we will ever know what exactly Billy Graham said to George W. Bush concerning this war.
Yeah, it's interesting that that Graham seems to have taken a lot of initiative to make these kinds of phone calls and statements about politics and policy around the world when he would have us believe that he was, quote, the generation's greatest evangelist.
Right.
It's strange to me how he could have crossed that chasm, because if you hold up Scripture as a standard and you look at the life of Christ, he railed against the political establishment of the day.
Exactly.
He didn't have very nice things to say about them, and Jesus made it very clear that he was there to preach the kingdom, and that the kingdom was at hand, and the kingdom is within you. And he said to the Pharisees that you cross heaven and earth to make one proselyte, and when you do, you make him 10 times the son of hell you are. I mean, that's some pretty strong language to use against the political establishment.
Yes, indeed it is. Another thing I learned from doing this book is to look very carefully at other biographies, and not necessarily just of Billy Graham, but more broadly, because although I'd been an investigative reporter and chiefly reporting on current wrongdoing of political figures, industrialists, and so forth, this is the first time I've done an in-depth biography, and it made me realize that there's a very clear distinction between memoir and biography. And that the thing that's tainted most of the books about Billy Graham is that the writers have depended very heavily on Billy Graham's memory. I think fortunately, at the time I didn't think so, 5 years ago, but fortunately Billy Graham and Franklin Graham refused interviews for this book. And therefore I went only to original sources and to other written sources. And the biographies that rely on memory end up being sort of the well gets poisoned. And it's not necessarily by evil intent. I mean, it's just all of our memories are problematic. And science has shown that we invent memories even to make our whole life story fit together better in our own heads. So I don't necessarily blame Graham for it, but biographers shouldn't lean on the subject too much, because it tends to make the record wrong. In August, Time Magazine released their latest book about Billy Graham. It's pretty much his career wrap-up from Time Magazine. It's called The Preacher and the Presidents, Billy Graham and the White House by Nancy Gibbs and Michael Duffy, who are both Time Magazine writers. And had I read this book without having done 5 years of research, I would have accepted much of what they said at face value. But having an in-depth knowledge, I have 30 or 40 pages dog-eared in this thing with notes where they've made factual errors or questionable choices of source material. One that really leaped out at me was that although they do acknowledge Graham's kind of dark relationship with Nixon. That's the only time these authors go into his politics too much. They try to paint Nixon as being totally the bad person and Graham as being a nice man who went along with Nixon. So they quote Nixon from Nixon wrote a political biography leading up to the 1960 election when he ran for president, and it was called Six Crises. And they quote Nixon, quote, that Eisenhower was a far more complex and devious man than most people realized, period. Okay, so they're quoting Nixon talking about Eisenhower, who was a beloved president in this country. He was considered grandfatherly and just a nice old guy. And here's his vice president saying, quote, a far more complex and devious man than most people realized. Ooh, evil Nixon. Well, it turned out at that point I'd already written this book. This was going to press back when their book came out. I had quoted the same sentence from the same book. But listen to this. Nixon would remark in Six Crises, quote, Eisenhower was a far more complex and devious man than most people realized, comma, and in the best sense of those words, period. Nixon was complimenting Eisenhower for his political acumen. I mean, whether you consider it a compliment or not, Nixon meant to be complimenting him.
Yeah.
He was saying he was more complex and devious in the best sense of those words. And yet these biographers left off a phrase which modified, a modifying phrase, which completely changed the meaning of that sentence.
What was the phrase?
Well, in the best sense of those words.
Nixon said, I see.
In the best, he thought he was complimenting, Nixon thought he was complimenting him, and they painted as Nixon running down Eisenhower. That's a very different meaning. And that's something I would never have parsed if I hadn't done 5 years of research and stumbled on that myself. You know, it's made me leery of history. I really want to know more about who wrote it and know more about original sources than I ever wanted to before.
Well, and it makes you leery about what things are being said today. You know, recent history of how some of the evangelical giants, no pun intended, like John Hagee, the late Falwell, and some of these others, who do you think that they have in some regard patterned themselves after Graham and his attempt to develop relationships with not only the media but politicians and administration?
I think Graham absolutely opened the door, and in a very explicit way. Up until 1951, there had never been a prayer service on the steps of the U.S. Capitol. And Graham got his political friends to pass an act of Congress to permit him to have a prayer service there. He began to have the prayer breakfasts with the presidents. He began to intrude himself as a character into the national conversation on the national stage. And he opened the door for today's widespread involvement of religion in politics in America. He was a little more circumspect. He wasn't quite as out front as the more recent people you've mentioned. But that was a sign of the times. He was breaking very new ground when he stepped in there. And he made it comfortable for presidents to commingle with religious groups. By the time Reagan came along, Reagan was not a religious man when he was president of the Screen Actors Guild all his early life. He was very diffident about religion, but someone counseled him when he was coming up to his run for the White House, and he suddenly started attending evangelical conventions and making promises to them that appealed to them, where Carter was a very different kind of Christian. Carter has always subscribed to that acts, that our salvation is in our acts. And Graham and the evangelicals believe that our salvation is in our beliefs. And Reagan began to speak their language, and the evangelicals went full tilt for Reagan against Carter. I mean, Carter was a minister, and yet the evangelicals turned against Carter and voted for Reagan, voted him into office. And then Bush, certainly, the first Bush, George H.W., made his appeal to the evangelicals as well. And it really intruded from Graham forward and intruded religion into our politics.
And well, you know, it's not a, it's
good to good.
It's not a new idea. I mean, if you look at the history of King Henry VIII and everything he did to the church during his reign, that Cardinal Wolsey was one of his chief ministers, and there was a strong relationship there. During the American Revolution, Presbyterian ministers were railing from the pulpit about revolution, and there are a number of instances where, particularly one in South Carolina, the preaching went on for 3.5 hours. And after that, the men rushed out and picked up their guns and went into battle. It's not a new thing, but we would, I don't know, somehow thinking about it happening in the Revolutionary War seems a little bit
more remote,
more palatable than today, because, you know, we'd like to believe that that was more redeeming than the war that we're in right now, of course.
Right, right.
Well, we'll continue this conversation in just a moment. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Stay tuned to the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Are you looking for a one-stop shop to find all your favorite books and videos? Look no further. Northern Voice Bookstore has everything you need. Hundreds of titles, from self-defense, survival, and financial freedom, to history, politics, conspiracy, and everything you need to know about the New World Order. You can order everything you need on the web, 24 hours a day, at northernvoicebookstore.com. Or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, Post Office Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. Northern Voice Bookstore offers a broad range of different perspectives and believes strongly that the American people need alternative sources of information in order to understand the society they live in today. You won't find a better selection of books or videos anywhere. So make Northern Voice Bookstore your bookstore. Visit us online at northernvoicebookstore.com or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, P.O. Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. And make sure to tell them you heard about us on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
The Berkey Light's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkey Light, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkey Light is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkey Light, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look. And I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Welcome back to the program. In our last segment with Cecil Bothwell, we've had a caller to ask to announce Ron Paul Meetup Group will be Monday, February 4th in Parsons, Tennessee, and that will be held at Granny's Chicken, Granny's Kitchen Restaurant, and you can reach Cheyenne at the number 731-967-2933. That's 731-967-2933. That's February 4th in Parsons, Tennessee.
You know, Nadia, just before the break, you were talking about looking back through history, and it's interesting that we all tend to bring our own filters to the way we look back and the way we look at current events as well, which is why I think it's useful to listen to programs like yours that take a more critical look at many of the news events. I know I've listened to some of your programs, and you don't accept the government line on everything, for instance. Looking back at the founding fathers, for instance, these days we hear from some quarters that we should return to the religiosity of the founding fathers, that they intended that God be included. And then there are those who say, no, there was a definite separation. And I was reading an article about the Civil War era recently, and during the Civil War period, mid-19th century, there were cries in the United States to return to the founding fathers' separation of church and state, because some people then were thinking that the church and state were getting too close together in the 1850s and 60s. So things seem, there's sort of a circularity to all that.
That's right. And, you know, there is a lot of confusion about that. That thought, as you said, emerged in the 1850s. A lot of people think that it was part of the forum and the dialogue among the founding fathers, but it actually wasn't. And it's somebody in the 1850s lifted out something that was said in the late 18th century. But those specific words that there shall be separation of church and state never existed.
Right. So it's always subject to our particular, to our own biases, and then how we read, and for instance, what we read of, if we go way back to the founding fathers, will you read the peripheral materials in addition to the, you know, because there's always that, you know, what were they really thinking when they wrote this? What did they really mean? And meaning, you know, putting meaning into words is as strong as, it's as important as how we frame in words the things that we mean, if you see what I mean, both how we phrase things and then how we interpret those meanings. Another interesting little piece of information that sort of it fit into my book because I happened to stumble on it before it went to press, but I was surprised to learn that Hillary Clinton has been part of a very evangelical right-wing Christian group in Washington since about 1992. She's been part of a group that included John Ashcroft, Trent Lotz, other people who think of as being conservative Republicans, and Joe Lieberman was involved in it as well. A group that includes that believes that politicians are chosen by God.
Oh, interesting concept. Well, I beg to differ on that. Before we leave, Cecil, I want to be sure people can obtain a copy of your book. You want to give out that information?
Sure. The best way nationally is to go to Amazon.com and look up The Prince of War by Cecil Bothwell, or they can go to my website, theprinceofwar.com.
Well, Cecil, I've enjoyed this. An hour is much too short. I hope you'll come back on the show sometime, because I know you work on a lot of stories.
I'm working on a book about a very crooked sheriff right now. It might be good listening.
Well, I hope you'll come back on the show.
I'd love to. Thank you, Nadia.
Thank you, Cecil, and thanks for listening. Stay tuned to the Public Broadcasting Network. I'll see you tomorrow.
To everything,
with recent international flight from the